What kind of equipment do you use to look at the eclipse, to monitor what's going on?
So I've got two German equatorial tracking clock drives, astronomical mounts, that can track the sun. On each one of those, I've got two telescopes with DSLRs and a video camera. And then surrounding me, I'll have probably another 8 or 10 various tripods with things like GoPros and wide-angle cameras and time-lapse and things like that. So it'll be a very busy time.
Yeah, it's some pretty serious gear. But you've been known to take some incredible photos. The U.S. Postal Service released a commemorative stamp with a touch-sensitive feature, and this stamp features your work. I have a two-part question. One is, how did you take that incredible photo? And then how did that stamp come to exist?
Well, the photo was taken in Libya in North Africa back in 2006 during an expedition that we had. We had about 80 people in our group, and we were set up in a big tent camp that the government had set up for eclipse tourists. So we're probably over 1,000 people in this tent camp. On the eclipse day, I shot that with one of the telescopes that I'll be using this year. And it's actually a composite photograph, and by that I mean it's composed of about 20 separate exposures at different shutter speeds. The sun's corona has an enormous range in brightness, and you can take that all in with the eye, but it's very difficult to capture with any single image. This is a process well known to photographers called high dynamic range imaging, where you take multiple exposures at different shutter speeds, and you try to compress the brightest and the faintest parts of the subject into one photograph. So that the image we shot in the desert there with multiple exposures, and then at home I did a lot of computer work to combine all these photographs into one final image.
It's my understanding that looking at that corona in such a way, the way it's depicted in this photo composite, is not something we've always been able to do easily, and it's not something that's easily done from space either. You have to do it from Earth, right?
In terms of imaging the corona from the ground versus space, we can look at the sun's corona from spacecraft like SOHO. They have a telescope specially designed for photographing the sun's corona because it creates an artificial eclipse by blocking the sun's disk. It's got an occulting disk built right into the telescope that blocks the sun. But that occulting disk is quite large in order for this to work effectively. It's quite large, and it really blocks not only the sun but a lot of the inner corona. So we can't see that from space. What we can do is we can see that very effectively from the surface of the Earth during a solar eclipse. So we get much better views of the inner corona from the ground than we can from a spacecraft.
How do we know what the path of totality is going to be?
To calculate the path of a solar eclipse, you need to know three things very accurately. You need to know where the sun is, where the moon is, and where the Earth is, with respect to each other in three dimensions in space. And once you have that basic information, then you can figure out where the moon's shadow is, because the moon's shadow points away from the sun. That's what's lighting up the moon. And with spherical trigonometry and some computer programs, you can easily calculate all these kinds of details of exactly where the moon's shadow is going to pass and how long the total phase is going to last. It's not trivial, but it's not a big mystery, at least not to astronomers.
How did people through, like, most of human history and ancient peoples know how to make these calculations? Were they able to make these calculations, and did people know that this was going to happen?
Well, we've only been able to calculate the positions of the Earth, Moon, and Sun very accurately since the time of Newton, when he produced his great work, the Principia, which is basically the laws of universal gravitation. That made it possible to create models to calculate the positions of the Moon and the Sun quite accurately, and the accuracy of those predictions have gotten better and better as time has gone by. We've used spacecraft to fine-tune exactly where some of these objects are in space, so we've gotten better and better at calculating those things. Before the time of Newton, in fact, if we go back to 2,000 years ago or more, then people were calculating eclipses in a very different way. They were using a very convenient fact that eclipses tend to repeat themselves every 18 years, 11 days, and 8 hours. And that's a cycle called the Saros cycle. And it involves several different motions of the moon that almost overlap when you go 18 years into the future. You get the same, even though they have slightly different periods, the periods all overlap when you go 18 years, 11 days, 8 hours into the future. So, for instance, this August 21st eclipse through the United States, if we go back 18 years, 11 days, 8 hours, there was another total solar eclipse that looked very similar to this one, but it passed through Europe and Turkey and India on August 11th, 1999. So you can use this Saros cycle to predict future and past eclipses. The Saros doesn't work if you go for periods longer than 1,500 years, because the Saros only lasts 12 to 1,500 years. But it's convenient for predicting the approximate dates of eclipses hundreds of years in the future and past. And that's what the ancients did, because they simply looked, they kept detailed records of when eclipses took place, and they recognized this period in their recordings and historical notes.
Has the eclipse ever been used in for political means? Or I'm sure trying to understand what's happening has had some just fascinating political and sort of religious interpretation.
Well, there was one very interesting eclipse in the year, I believe it was 584 BC. There was a total eclipse that passed through what is now Iran, but back in those days it was Persia. And there was a war between two nations in the area, the Medes and the Lydians. And this war had been going on and off for the better part of 7 or 8 years. There would be skirmishes, and then they would recoup and get reinforcements and then start another war. Well, in the middle of the battle one day in 584 BC, there was a total eclipse of the sun. And both warring factions saw this as a sign from the gods that they were dissatisfied, unhappy with this war. So they actually laid down their weapons and had a royal marriage between the prince on one side and the princess on another, and made peace because of a total solar eclipse. So that's one of the most remarkable eclipse stories. There's another story about Christopher Columbus. This story involves a lunar eclipse, not a solar eclipse. But this was on Columbus's fourth voyage to the New World, and he had some problems with one of his ships, and he had to scuttle it on a beach in, I believe it was Jamaica, and he was relying on the goodwill of the indigenous people there in Jamaica to supply him and his crew with water and food while Columbus waited for a rescue. Of course, nobody even knew he needed help, so he had to just wait for the next expedition to the New World that would come across them and ask for help then. So it was going to be a wait of 6 months or a year or more. So the locals got a little tired of Columbus and his crew and started withholding food. And Columbus decided, he looked through his astronomical almanac that he had on board the ship, and he realized there was going to be a lunar eclipse on this one evening, February 29th, I think 1503. And I may not have the year exactly right. But he knew there was going to be a total lunar eclipse. The moon was going to rise in total lunar eclipse. And he told the chief of the tribe that the gods were unhappy with his people about withholding food from Columbus, and that he was going to take the moon away from them if they didn't recapitulate. The locals didn't believe Columbus, but the moon rose, and it was blood red because it was in total lunar eclipse. And they decided they better make nice with Columbus and start feeding him again. So he sort of used the eclipse to pull a fast one over them, and they provided him with food for another a number of months before he was rescued. I think that's where Mark Twain got the idea for his story, A Yankee in King Arthur's Court, where I think the Yankee is going to be executed, and he conjures up, he tells them that there's going to be an eclipse of the sun because he shouldn't be executed. Of course, that one's all fictional.
There's another total solar eclipse visible in the United States on April 8th, 2024, and the path of totality just so happens to brush right along this region in far west Kentucky and southern Illinois. What should we know about that eclipse?
Well, first of all, you lucky people. You get two total solar eclipses within 7 years, where the rest of us have to travel. So that particular eclipse, that one begins in the South Pacific across into Mexico, and then runs diagonally across the U.S. from Texas up through western Kentucky and Indiana up to Ohio and up through New England right along the border between the U.S. and Canada. So Canada gets part of that eclipse as well. That particular eclipse The moon is a little bit closer to the Earth during that eclipse, so the moon appears a little larger in the sky, and the path of totality is wider. And that means that you get a longer total eclipse. Instead of 2 minutes and 40 seconds, it's closer to like 4.5 minutes for that particular eclipse if you're in the very center of it. The bad part of that eclipse in 2024 is that it occurs in April. Well, we all know about April showers. That's a very unstable time weather-wise for the United States. And the prospect of having clear skies is not as good as this summer. That's not to say it won't be clearer at many places along the U.S., but it's just not as likely as this eclipse this August. So I wouldn't put off seeing the August eclipse because you can wait and see the one in 2024 because the weather prospects aren't as good. Plus, once you've seen the 2017 eclipse, you will want to see the 2024 as well.